because it seems vulnerable. That's when you look at cause and situation, it makes you vulnerable. But Jesus was a man who said, confess your sins before your fellow men, which means talk out your problems with others. And that's what a group seminar session really is. It's the healthiest form of therapy there is, where people talk out their problems and come to grips with it, and then the cause is resolved. The hiding behind the frustration is no longer there. And therefore you get your strength back, and you get your health back. As long as you keep sedating it or hiding it or pushing it in the corner, it's going to keep popping up like a, what do you call that thing?
Jack
in the box. That's it. But if you can look at it and talk it, and that's what group, that's why group reinforcement is so wonderful, you people come together and talk and share. It is this common exchange that releases a lot of illnesses in us and pays down the symptoms.
Gavin, I don't know, I just feel like I need to ask this security for you. What if she talks with her mother and does everything she knows to do and her mother just walks off, refuses to change? What can she do? What can Martha herself do to better this situation?
Well, the yogis have postures that they devise to compensate for those type of problems when they come up. One posture is called lion pose. Good. Most people think lion pose is like all the lions, but it really means to stick your tongue out and so what, man. You can suffer with your headaches. It's not mine no more, it's yours. That's why the yogis, the word means unified field. These were the early therapists, men who come to realize the unity of life between the child and the parent. And alright, since the parent don't want to make some kind of a restitution with the child, and the child wants to make restitution with the parent, then it's up to the child now to do one or two things. They provide what we call antic therapy, or the stage, all life is a stage, and we are merely actors and actresses, we have a record. So they made this to the patient now, or student of the Eastern Problem in those days, look at the problem from a theatrical comedy and says, okay, reverse the role. You're mama, and they're the kid. We play these roles back and forth, and before you know it, in this process of unification, they develop what we call antic postures. So they said that the king of the beast is the lion. The highest emotions you have is your fears to face yourself. And what is the behavior of a lion when he wants to show that he's a king? Good. And so you say, okay, mom, that's it. You don't want to make some kind of a communication, to you want to keep your own lifestyle? Good. Me too, I'm lion. And before you know it, it's very hard though to stick your tongue out at your parent, because why? You know it's not something you normally would do. Right, exactly. But when you can come to grips for your own health's sake, after you try your best to make communication, then you have to for your health's sake. You don't have to feel angry about them. That's the way they're going to be, and that's it. Alright, fine. I gotta be healthy. I cannot waste my time to try to be sick just because you don't want to make any kind of a change. We all make mistakes, but we all learn from the mistakes. And that's the whole purpose of it. And not to feel destroyed by a mistake, because it would be highly impossible if the Model T was going to be the only car and there was no improvement. We'd be all driving Model T. You see? But the Model T has improved to where we are all driving better and better models. So we ourselves are becoming more self-conscious. And that's where your health is. Your health is used.
Yes. Anybody else?
Let him, as parents, let him experience the blockage or whatever ill effects they get from the candies and cookies, and let him let it go? Or is this related in some way, shape, or form to his previous illness? I think he does suffer lack of energy or poor disposition because of poor diet, but does not identify it. Relate to it and accept the time that is there, even though we try to tell him.
It's going to be hard for him at that age to accept what you're saying because it doesn't click for him to intellectually comprehend it. As a child, the body develops a type of wanting recognition all the time. It's not an adult. Now, it will do these things to get recognition. And don't look at it as a bad attitude. They don't have any alternative inside of them to do anything more than that. This is the normal growth of that person. If they have an injury of any type or any kind of problem, they will always move to that direction for some kind of a recognition. From your standpoint as a parent, it's a cost factor. You can't let them get away with it. And you can't allow it to not do something for it. Though they have to go through the problems of being clogged up or try to get some kind of attention, like putting on all kind of a gears in their head. We have to maintain some kind of self-discipline in them to get them to take on responsibility so that the body eventually generates its own immunity and will start correcting. But it can do that right away, it will. It's growing.
He can't even identify a hunger pain because it's his stomach would hurt. That was for a while then, for a period of time. We refer to it as a pain.
All right.
But
was
he
born like that?
Gone,
was he born like that?
No, he was a chunky baby.
He ate very well until he got sick. And when he came back from the hospital...
Well, either got sick or until his younger brother was born.
Which happened about the same time. Sorry, folks. And I have had him to doctors, and the doctor said the reason he does not eat is because I tell him to. I always tell him, eat, finish your plate, eat.
Let me ask a crazy question. You made a statement. He didn't have the problems until he had a younger brother showed up in the home. Then the problems came up?
Well, the younger brother came right after the illness, too.
She feels as though the illness may have some lasting effect or repercussions into his diet. I have always identified it as partially sibling rivalry, suddenly somebody else there to pay attention.
That's part of it, true, but there's something more going on. The sibling rivalry is there. That children do have, and they look for attention, and their whole world seems to collapse because the attention is shifted. But it usually attacks their stomach, number one. and it affects your breathing, number two. So, but what I'm trying to get at the more is better. What color comes to your mind? This is a crazy question. When you think of yourself pregnant to the boy that has the illness?
Blue.
Before you got pregnant with him, do you know of any disappointment that was going on in your life?
Yes.
Well, that is carried over into the boy in the pregnancy. So, how old was he when the other brother came in to the picture?
Two.
It overpowered the brain too much. You couldn't cope with the sudden shift in the preference.
Mm-hmm.
You shifted your preference from him to someone else too soon for him to cope with. So his body went into recoil. Normally it would be in his stomach. Okay. What time of the day you notice the very first time you complain?
In the evening.
Around 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock? Or around 9
o'clock? I think
it's
o'clock. Right after school, about 4:30 or 5 o'clock.
What? Do you complain to what?
Of hunger pain, of being hungry.
That's your question?
Mm-hmm. Does he eat his lunch? I do want to mention something. He eats very well at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we are out with family or friends or when we are at the grandmother or here, for instance, it seems to me like it might be an attention getting more than anything. And because he knows that it aggravates me, that he doesn't need it in front of other people. And I think that the game he's playing with us, because he knows it upsets us.
But that was even when he was a child, a toddler, an infant and a toddler, and to the point where
that's
with
the disappointment.
And there was a lot of this.
Yeah.
And gagging. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a child dislike food.
But that's the disappointment I fear from her. Let's go back to your situation with the disappointment. Did you, at the time you got disappointed before you while you were pregnant with him, did you feel a loss of appetite?
I think I only ate one thing when I was pregnant.
What's that?
Blueberries and pancakes.
Blue.
I'm serious.
You got blue.
Blue, yes.
Blue.
At 3 o'clock in the morning and any time in the day or night.
Yeah, the body got over traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
So the baby is feeling the over traumatization after birth with the other brother coming into the picture so fast. He's looking for the attention getting a syndrome. So,
and we've been feeding it for 11 years, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Been
by telling him, eat. And by getting
but
his
But he is, you know, a little bit on the underweight.
No, he's not.
That's why the American Indians say, fail to speak with pork tongue. Years ago when I was working with them, the first time I heard the statement, I didn't understand what they meant. I thought they said the pale face was a liar. I said, you need to say the pale face lie. He said, the Indian man said, no, we don't mean that. He says, the pale face, when he says, come, he means go. And he can't reconcile that in his brain, that's why he gets sick too fast. So when you tell the child don't eat or do eat, his brain from this trauma isn't releasing because you were traumatized before when you were pregnant with him. So naturally there was a conflict going on inside of you, so he's going to act out the opposite very fast. You see, that's one of the problems with most of us. We don't know what goes on in the child when you're pregnant with the child. And the connectedness in the child. And the parent is going to act a certain way, and the child is going to be controlled. And if you told him to, okay, you don't want to eat,
Stop. Okay, but then when the 2 hours goes by, or an hour and a half goes by, you'll be asking for chocolate or cookies or something. Also, at that point, say, all right.
Well, the point is, remember, she is soured off at life by the disappointment. So what is the baby going to want? Something sweet.
Wow.
The symptomatic patterning is from the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
How she felt. And if she was eating blueberries, she's really sour. No, we wanted something sweeter. So the baby is doing that. Knowing the cause now, then her attitude to herself during that period is a re-evaluation. And Simon telling all these men are just scratching the surface of trying to teach people visualization. I'm getting you to your cause where you can correct your cause. Remember, Jesus said, physician, heal yourself. That's what he told the physician.
Mm-hmm.
The cause is the thing, not so much the symptoms. If you get to the cause, that the disappointment at the time that registers in the child, then as you look back at those causes, look back at those disappointments, and start re-evaluating in your consciousness, and in a plus, minus, it could be worse this, and then in that resolution you can actually phase off, then the child will pick up, because you were still the matrix of the mother, and you were the donor of your ovum, and you carry it for 9 months. The father doesn't feel that as much, because the cause factor of maintaining overpowers that in the body. But a little baby feels it more, because that's the time the body starts to pick up. So it's different than the woman. She carries that sensation in the early part of her life.
Mm-hmm.
The father carries it in the latter part of his life. So nature has to make compensation some way. Both of them carry it at the same time, and they fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the compensation. One is the breadwinner of the home, the other is going to carry the anguish. And then they're going to compensate. So that's why you find in American society, the women are taking over and running the executive office, and men are running the economy. But this is what it takes us about 40, 50 years to see it happening in the society. The shifting patterns of the health. So if you would start looking back at the period when you were pregnant or what the things that disappointed you, then you can start reconstructing back in your head and your feelings to start phasing it out. Then you'll notice the body starts changing. And so you don't have to say eat anything. You feel that eating is important to him. You go and eat without even asking. You just feel the urge to eat. But when you didn't feel that, when you were carrying him and you only gravitate to one type of food, those urges are locked in. Now, in the agricultural language, it says, I visit the sins of the parents of the third and fourth generation. Today we make such a fetish of the word sin, with so much guilt and guilt, where the word actually came from an archer term. It's an archer term for missing the mark. That's where the word came from. You didn't synchronize properly with the target and you miss it.
Yes.
But the church has made a big mess of all those words of query and not suffering it in terms of our health. And we never seem to get out of the problems. But when we start looking at things objectively for the first time, we heal ourselves, and that's all right. We are entitled to health. We're not entitled to miracles or possessions, we're entitled to health. If we're all lying down dead in this room and God walks and says, okay, you folk, what do you want? Your breath back? Some more miracles or some possessions? We're going to ask for. You can't ask for miracles because you can't perform it if you don't breathe. You can't ask for possessions because you can't keep it if you don't breathe. So we all want to breathe. And that's what's important. Our health is ours. We are entitled that right to be healthy. But we're not entitled to miraculous powers or possessions, because those are only things to entertain us. But as far as our health, that's what He created us for, to breathe life into us, to function in a healthy state, to think and relate and serve. And we can't do it unless we understand what's going on in ourselves properly. So if you go back to the moments when you were in the anguish stage, and start phasing those out, and the child would pick up. and know that this is not for him to eat right, just as much as the other body is fasting. He will gradually shift his habits with that changing. But it has to start from inside of you, because that's where it begins. It's like, alright, here's a mole, and the mole has a scratch in the form of an X. And every object that comes out of that mole will have a scratch in the X. Grinding off the scratch off the product isn't going to get rid of it from the mole. You know what I mean? You got to grind off the X from the mold, then you can pour it, and then you don't have any printing. That's how we're talking about. That's what therapy is from within. We heal ourselves. But at the same time, we heal our offspring. Because we correct what is the anguish in us that is already transferred to the... So when that is corrected from within, they start phasing out. As when it becomes obvious, they start talking or much more openly. They surprise you how they pick up and start getting rid of it. Because internally you are doing it correctly. And this is a group activity you do not even like to, because the child is a sperm. So you need both types of communication.
Did the sibling rivalry be... That is such a common...
That will phase itself off.
Itself?
There's nothing to do. That's not a word. That's what we call pecking order. in the barnyard, my mother used to say, don't feed the cow first before you feed the horse. And don't feed the dog before you feed the cow. And one day I said, Mom, what's wrong with her? I'm going to feed this cow this morning and kill the horse. And I learned what the pecking order was. The time I went to the cow to feed the cow, before I fed the horse, he showed me who he was. Kicked him up and gave him a few good kicks in the butt. And then I said, okay, eat first. that's what they call pecking order. But the thing is this, the parents can release the tension and the frustration from within. You understand? And then the child will automatically realign itself, because that's where it comes from. So he wouldn't feel sibling rivalry no more. He just would automatically relate. He wouldn't feel threatened, because when the person, the parent, is actually modifying in their own mind their anguish, the child is modifying. But we never knew that until we had a lot of patients that couldn't be cured by other methods, but it looked at the problem. A lot of research is going on today trying to get to the causes of what people have.
Yeah, I did want to do a discussion along these lines.
Right, because they're realizing they run a dead end with the treating symptoms, and it's not in the symptoms. Symptoms are only so much, but then they get the cause.
And now this week, for all diseases or malfunctions, there's always, as well as the nutritional thing or the clogging up, there's also something else as a cause.
Even your friend who has cancer, they have trauma. You see, the five primary causes of disease, and I'm not talking the secondary ones, I'm talking the five primary causes of disease. One, wrong nutrition. And that wrong only comes from time, it doesn't come from anything, it doesn't come from the chemistry. If it came from the chemistry, then it would be incorrect, because the body is composed of 144 elements. So that would be incorrect to say wrong chemistry. The wrong timing to plug it in. And that's in nutrition. A broken bone, that's the deepest structural function. You have to correct that. That bone is broken. Then the bacteria. We can't leave ourselves in unsanitary state. We can't live in an unsanitary state. The bacteria pumps will go up too fast. Those are primary causes for illnesses. Then we have the genetics or heredity. The things that we carry over from our parents without knowing what caused it. And the parents may not even be aware that Well, that's from the time of Pari Khan.
That's right.
Yeah. And last but not least, and yet is the most important one, is trauma. The cause of all the other four.
Mm-hmm. And that could either be directly or indirectly.
And it begins with this. You see, a trauma starts with your mouth. That's why when Jesus said in his agricultural way, it's not what you put in your mouth that defiles you, but what comes out of your mouth defiles you. You start all the trauma of the universe with your voice, with your tongue. The things you say sets up the trauma. Not only for those who hear, it can hurt them, yes. But it hurts you more because you have to swallow your enzymes in your negative attitude to the other person. Now if you would spit out the enzymes, right, you'd call them a sudden bitch. It would be all right.
Everything's fine.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah. You spit out the enzymes, right, you're calling them that. So you suffer more than they do. You see, but, we never look at it from that way, but now we know when you take an enzyme count before and after somebody, call you a son of a bitch or whatever you want to call it, it shows up very, very badly. So who really suffers? Not the person that heard it, that you call it, though they deserve it, but you, the person who is saying it, is actually swallowing back in a toxin. But you're doing it all the time, so you have to look at it. You see, that's why I say, Mom, she, maybe more, why she became a, but sometimes they swallow their own toxins so much from their own frustrations and their expectations, and then realizing that their expectations are not going to come true. They don't want to hear, they don't want to budge. But at the same time, in a non-budging state, they can be biologically refrigerated or petrified. And they will never show any outward symptoms, but slowly they'll have more and more anguish inside, more and more resentment to things, and they have a deaf ear to any kind of new idea. So we want to shut up. So these are things that we don't realize are going on, but it's the trauma. What we say to ourselves or what we say to others.
So that's the worst one.
Yes, that's the
cause of the other four. Mm-hmm.
That's
the
problem. Now, at first you have nutrition.
Well, that's still to be fit.
Yeah. And
if see, you keep something inside, it eats you up.
That's right, exactly. That's what we call that the trauma. That's the one that causes all of them, the thing that you keep fermenting inside. They call it the internal dialogue. Going on inside of you, you never get it out, you never speak out.
But if you feel like saying you're a son of a bitch, then that's bad too.
It's better to say it than spit. And stick it there.
You're serious about spit?
I'm serious.
I didn't put your, okay.
Because what they used to call yogis, or in the Eastern countries, these men were psychological therapists. But they were grounded in physiology, that today we realize it's not all psychology. There are a lot more of physiology involved. And they corrected the problems when the student didn't have patience. They call them students for one reason. If you call them a patient, it's a handout and something for nothing attitude. They didn't want to foster that. So they call the person a student or a disciple. That made him responsible for his behavior. And therefore he had to go through the schooling. It was a good psychology that they used that. But it gave the person a motivation that one day he would be master of his problems. And that was very, very good, because then they were able to heal themselves and get out. But they did a lot of biological techniques to heal the people. So they would tell them, stick the tongue out, thumb their nose, and spit and do different things. And people thought these were all yoga techniques, when in actuality there were biological ways to make the person look at their own shock and trauma and resolve it by becoming more ill. And then in the certain temples they went as far as they called the martial art. They'd build the images of the parents I tell them to beat the heck out of it in their bare hands. You know, after a while, you ever see where you're really angry and frustrated, you want to break things. Well, all right, you'll break the image of your daddy and mom and the pottery used to. And if you don't hurt your fingers and your hands, good, you kill yourself. So that's how they used to. So the most of it developed a sort of a fighting rage with the purpose of curing the individual. So they got that. You develop a character to be. The whole idea is to get your health back. It may take many routes to get there, but whenever you get it, you get it.
In your experience, what is
the
basic philosophy of life?
It has no effect on the brain if you keep it long enough till it gets sweet in your mouth to the air desires. But you gotta keep it in your mouth to get sweet by the enzymes, and it has no effect on the brain because the enzymes
breaks it down.
Right, exactly. It stings right now, but I have to hold it long enough to get sweet. Now, the first time I did it, and I was told to do it, I freaked out. I couldn't believe it. The person who told me to do that was Yogananda, and he says, most people would like to drink alcohol and be able to cope with their daily life. He said, but it's not something you show off with, but if you do have to find yourself in that bind with your friends, keep it in the mouth long enough till it gets sweet, and then you'll find out there's no effect. It's yet I start experimenting, and then I realize what the enzymes are really doing.
You can drink out very quickly.
Yeah. But you don't go tell anybody that, because they say, oh, he's an alcoholic. You can afford to be an alcoholic.
What if you get, I'm real sensitive to alcohol. Just one drink. I already feel.
Right, because when it goes in, you don't hold it long enough for the enzymes in the mouth.
I thought maybe there's an allergy.
No, the enzymes have a time period where they can phase it in and take care of it. But if you don't hold it long enough, then you'll get the effect on the brain. It'll affect the pineal or the pituitary to make it foggy. But if you hold it long enough, this is the price you pay. You get a stinging sensation in the mouth from the long holding, but at the same time you don't get the effect of the brain. And so I compensated. Instead of feeling fuzzy, I'd rather have the stinging left in my mouth. But that's what it does, it compensates. So right now the mouth stings, but it's better than the brain sting, because then the brain gets foggy, you can't drive, you do anything, you get too tired. But this way the saliva is phasing it up. But you can do it because it's a normal function of the body. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Get your tape recorder.
These are for Ed, and the rest of you.
Yeah.
Okay.
The energy has wavelengths, like the channel here. So many different channels are working.
But would one person say need strengthening more than another person, as opposed to dissolving?
Again, don't focus like that. The people who have a karma with you, for you to help, will come. Disease is not an occupation. That's why they cannot call it an occupation after they graduate. They call it a what?
You mean healing?
Yeah.
Practice.
Good. Because they don't realize that the whole thing is a karmic debt that you're working out with people. You will be compensated in many ways, more than you share. But you're working with sick, when you work with sickness and malfunctions of health, this is karmic debt. So you don't take it personally. You're just resolving these situations between you and that individual. So they come to you instead of you go to them. Any other occupation, you can go out and advertise. But not when it comes to therapy. Because you're working out karmic debts. They will find you. All you got to do is be able to serve. And that automatically builds your reputation, your capacity to serve. That you can deliver the goods. How good you are is that you're a channel for the goodness that flows through you to help others. Like that doctor, she was trained as a regular MD, ended up at rubbing people's foot in the hand, right?
Yeah.
And became much more famous in her that way than the MD. So that's her karmic debt. You graduate and find yourself, then you see you're working with the karmic energy. And that's what initiation is for. Initiation is to establish a frequency. Now that word, that nurse, a doctor, is massaging. What do you think she's doing? Dissolving or eliminating?
Well, I don't think she's eliminating.
Okay.
So choice of those two, I'd say
dissolving. Bones are rigid, therefore our method would be a what? She's a channel for what?
What, dissolving?
Yes.
What, how come you couldn't, I guess you wouldn't call it strengthening, but the only way she strengthens the bones is through the muscles, right? So
right.
You could call it strengthening.
But the thing is to straighten those bones out is a dissolving principle. The rest of the thing would be secondary to it.
Oh, I see.
Dissolving is dissolving. Eliminating is eliminating. Strengthening is strengthening. Rebuilding is rebuilding. These are frequencies. The illness has nothing to do. They will give way to an eliminating principle, or they'll give way to a dissolving principle, or they'll give way to strengthening or rebuilding. Because you're already correcting constriction dilation that causes these conditions to appear. cannot confuse your energy with thinking of others. That's why we don't like to set anybody to into those levels unless they understand what they're doing. Consciousness is a gun. Words are bullets. Don't monkey around with it, the rest you get hurt with it. That's why therapists are people who don't talk much. A real therapist don't talk much. He just acts upon it. That he, the moment he trains himself more and more, he goes directly to the situation at work. And he can't have ifs and buts and maybes in his head. He's got to be idle. Let the thing flow to do what the frequency is. Once he finds his frequency, it's an automatic machine gun. There's no time to play with it. You're turning loose energy inside that person's body. So, if you know that your frequency is strengthened, you don't go thinking about elimination, dissolving and all those things. You go directly to strengthen those conditions that will bring the body back in balance. You're not concerned with what the obstacles are. The target is not important to me. It can be Hitler or Mussolini or whatever it is. I'm not concerned with that. I got a machine gun and will shoot it down. That's the whole concept that you're doing. The target is not important. You got something to do the job. But you don't worry about if they got a fortress or armament or sentries. Those are going to be there. The machine gun is the weapon to go in there and do the job, regardless of how much defense they got. So the strength is right away. You go to the person where you hold them. You want to strengthen conditions that will do the job of getting them well, not to concentrate on the things that interfere with it or block it. Those things are going to dissolve themselves as soon as you focus on strengthening those conditions that need to be strengthened, because they will come into action. It isn't you healing in the first place. No one heals. We only act as channels for the frequencies. But we don't know our frequency, we get mucked up. We learn it the hard way after a while. But if we recognize it, that's what initiations are for. There are many ways to get it to understand it. Once you got it, automatically it's working. So you get your ego out of the way. Fine-tuning of your technique is called timing. That's what you call the fine-tuning. You get it out of timing. The time they show up, the time you gotta work. Like last night, I was there and didn't touch no patient except Andy. All the rest, I talked to them about their trauma. Because they didn't have anything that I could touch to work on.
None of them?
That's what they had. They had all that trauma. They were all traumatized people. Yes, but that's a trauma from her and her mother.
I didn't hear what it was.
Her mother didn't want her to get pregnant. So her mother really laid it into her.
But don't you think she had a trauma before that?
She was never sick before that.
Oh.
As soon as she got pregnant, at the age she got pregnant, her mother already tore into her. Throw her out. She decided to leave. Then when she got a baby, you know, the problems came out. She decided to go home back to mom, try and straighten out. But the mother's fixed in her ways already. But they'll straighten it out because she realized what she has to do now to release the mother. Maybe it'll be all right. it to happen. I talk in the periphery of the information. When it gets to the nitty-gritty of the thing, I have a workshop. There are certain things you have to keep for yourself to earn a livelihood. You cannot give away to the general public.
After you give a workshop, won't she be able to do what she wants with it?
She can do what she wants with it, but they got all the information. It's enough for her to be one of the basic, to do the basic study, basic lip. You see, I broke up my workshop into several phases, phase one, phase two, and so forth. Each one is a building on the other one. Teach you on the subject. When you finish and you get your doctorate, and when you get the doctorate, then I'm going to teach you all this on the tuning processes. So at least you got something more than the rest of got. I like hit them by the mystics and the sheep sawing all the time. And when the sheep were born, they came out striped in black.
Striped black?
The bark, like a barber pole. You ever see a barber pole?
Yeah.
Well, he made them, put them along the drinking trough for the drinking water, where they drank their water. And when the pregnant sheep saw it, after a while, they depressed their consciousness that the light in the shadow was hitting it. Like how you see that light here?
Yeah.
So that was what is known as optic photography today. You can plan the color of the organism or the genetics of the organism. So in the pregnant state, this thing photographs. So he did that. And the lambs, when they were born, they came out striped. Instead of plain white, they all got striped. But his father-in-law never found out. He just thought that he was blessed by God.
Huh. He was to know that.
See, the thing is this, all the biblical little things, they blame God and they praise God. When God is working, yes, but not in the way people always want it to be.
How did that guy know to do that?
He had the dream.
Uh-huh.
That when he saw the sheep came up pregnant the first time and this light hit the trough, the very first time the light hit the trough, he noticed that that sheep was bleat. The light. Then he waited, you see, when that sheep got delivered, the baby sheep, it came out black and white instead of plain white, like all the rest. Then it dawned on him. All the rest weren't having the problem at the time that they were drinking the water, only this one sheep. So he decided to cut sticks and line them up like a fence pole. The shape of a power pole, they're part of the bark, no bark. So when the light hit it, they found the dark lines like that, the red light coming through that dark cloud.
Yeah.
And it hit the sheep all the time and it drank the water. And all the sheep would blare, blare like that. Those are the sheep that got all the colors on sheep.
They all bleated when they saw dark and light?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it's a reaction. They didn't expect the light to be like that.
Huh.
They did the most simple mechanics. A granular sand is made of the silicon. It rolls like a ball. They took papyrus or jute and wool blankets like a sheet. Put the slab on top of it and pull it over the sand on a log. That's how they move them. You never see me move a whole refrigerator and a piece of cardboard? Well, next time when you
but these things are much huger than refrigerators.
You can move any object on sand with a flat piece of cloth or anything. It's the oldest method known to man. We do it in South America all the time. We move huge, huge, big cloud. That truck going there, all I need to put it underneath the paper and pour the sand in front of it and pull it across. And you'd wonder how the hell you get it. It slides like ball bearings.
But how did they get them to fit together so well? Curved surfaces.
They stack the sand like everything else.
What I was told was he said he talked to some local people and says he knows this man who said that these birds dissolve the rocks with these herbs that they get. He said there's 12 herbs and that was how they did them. They dissolve them. Do you believe that? No way?
Well, I've seen them do it in South America, so I know how to do it already. Where I come from, they fill them with sand. Why do you stack sand and slide it up? Any rock you want, you can slide on sand. Try as you want.
How'd they get them to fit so smoothly?
They slide it on sand.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is how does one pot rock fit so smoothly on another?
You slide it on sand. You try it and you'll see. A sand is like a ball bearing. Those slabs are made of limestone. They're not made out of anything else. And it slides on sand. No matter how big it is, it'll slide on sand. And once they get it to where they position it, all they do is blow out the sand with a brush. Sweep out the sand, and it sits there, you don't move. They build a house, my dad would build a house, a part of his house, build like that. Slabs. Give you sand. Because that's how they move it. They find this rock over there, they cut it in slabs, and then they put the sand, spread the sand all the way. And get it for papyrus like a sheet. Put it along like a tobacco.
How did they cut the rock then?
Oh gosh. They do the simplest work that this part of the world would never believe in. Limestone doesn't cut with saw. You wet the limestone and then you take the papyrus or the jute or horse hair, and you grease it, and they put the little fillings of sand, and they turn it, and it cuts through the stone, like a blade.
So you can shape it any shape you want?
Any shape you want.
Oh, well, that's what I was wondering about.
That was the original saw, before man ever developed a metal saw. It was a string, coated with a silica sand. They use the horse hair, it got it strong, or they use pig's hair.
Still doesn't seem like it would cut through a giant slab of rock.
You got the erroneous notion that the rock is hard when you get it. It's soft like cheese. Then it dries, it gets hard. It's limestone, you know what limestone is? It's porous. Once you wet it, it'll cut.
How come these haven't dissolved away if it's that porous?
It doesn't dissolve away.
When it rains?
It does not do that.
Why?
It'll only get wet and soft, but it'll not collapse. But it won't collapse. More limestone is exposed to the air, the drier it becomes. It takes a long time to permeate it with water. only two wheels on the slabs of wood. And we put the stone in the wheel. And when the wheel turns, the stone turns with it. Tree and bend over with rope on a swivel axle or a beam, a long stick. Five or six guys will bend them over and tie it. Five more guys will push it and swing it. It's like an automobile tire. There's a way you tighten up your bolts on the wheel without using a wrench. You know that? And it'll defy somebody to understand how you did it without a wrench. It's a way you can wrench it in. You can have a wrench. All you did was take the bolt, put it on the screw, let it turn, and then you spin the wheel. And the wheel spinning will tighten the bolt up until it's like a wrench, lock itself, locking.
Forwards or backwards, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
No, but if you screw it forward, you have to spin the wheel up.
Spin the wheel back?
Yeah. Counterwise to the screw.
Astrophotographers who can calculate where you think the lines are in your chart. Who is the fellow that works up in the astrophotography? Marcia?
What? Honey?
What's the man that works on the astrophotography?
Can't hear you.
Who does the astrophotography? This young lady would like to know.
In California. Oh, you can?
He calculates where you suppose where your Jupiter lines fall at the time. You can buy the cosmic chart from the year 1900 to the year 2000 and figure out the whole sky. But it didn't even change because it's already set up there for everybody born every day. And so the day you're born, it would be in the chart.
Yeah, but it's pretty hard to figure out that way.
Like, Mama,
don't you have to sort of
luck
it out? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you have to go through it?
That's what I said a long time ago. I haven't learned anything more than to go through. I can go back, and I can go ahead before my time. So I tried both, and I found that it didn't work, and it's not possible. And when I tried to go back, they pushed me back here. If I try to go too fast forward, they push me back here. So what I learned, enjoy now because that's all I got. The nostril that breathes is the divinity that is me. And there is nobody out there to punish me for good or bad because there is no good or bad. The good or bad is my game I play with myself thinking I'm important or unimportant. When in actuality, God became me and he's having a ball. Allowing me to make an ass of myself, believing I'm doggone stupid or ignorant or all kind of muck up. And all he did tell me from the start of creation, go forth, multiply, and have dominion, but don't set up your franchises. So multiply means produce yourself as much as you want, trillions upon trillions of times, have dominion, play the game of running the show, but don't hang on to nothing. So, oh boy, is that the game?
Show.
Yeah. And when you live it out by going through it, he says, here, keep your suit. Don't trade it back in. I don't need it. It's already yours. You can modify it, make it look male, female, skinny, young, fat, or aged. But it's all here. Permanent suit. It's called living soil. See, I don't have a soul. I'm soul. Living soil. 144 elements in anymore.